Blog Talk Radio.
Howdy, welcome to Homemade Business 101. My name is Isaiah. I have the pleasure of introducing the host. You know him. He's everybody's hero, my best friend. Will you please join me in welcoming my granddaddy, Baba Jahi?
Well. Good evening. And welcome to another edition of Homebased Business 101 here on Blog Talk Radio. And we want to thank all of the listeners who have tuned in to a show here on Homebased Business 101, truly making this listener-supported radio. We thank you for your listens and all of that. And tonight, as you know, we do on Monday nights, we host the National Black Unity News Show. And as we do each time we come on these airways, we start off with a reading from Daily Motivations for African-American Success. Today's reading from February the 11th is Affirmative Action. The future is purchased by the present. That's from Daisy B. Bates, journalist and civil rights activist. Reading for the day. An affirmation is a positive thought that you repeat to yourself. Using affirmations allows you to implant quality thoughts into your subconscious so that you can feel and perform better. Let's assume that you're having a splitting headache. Here's your opportunity to combine the power of words with the power of thought. You begin to repeat to yourself, my head feels wonderful, or my head is relaxed and at ease. As you engage in self-talk, no doubt a little voice in the back of your mind will say, you know you're lying. Your head feels lousy. However, if you continue with the positive affirmations, that thought you are feeling better will take root in your subconscious. You will indeed start to feel better, and an hour later you'll barely remember you had a headache. You can use affirmations in a variety of areas. For example, in your relationships, people always treat me with love and respect. I treat all people with love and respect. For your mental attitude, quote, every day and every way I'm getting better and better. For your prosperity, quote, I feel healthy, I feel good, and I feel prosperous. The possibilities are endless. If you choose to make affirmations a part of your life, you will find them to be a powerful tool. And close that out with, today I will engage in positive self-talk that will draw me closer to my goals. So that is our reading for today. And tonight we have, while we wait for Mr. Murphy to join us on this program, we have Mr. Bill Gooden, who is the, Mr. Murphy's the publisher of the National Black Unity newspaper. Chief, and Mr. Bill Gooden is the chief editor of the newspaper. So we want to thank you for being able to sit in for Mr. Murphy while we wait for him to join us on this program today. And how are you feeling, Bill?
Yes, sir. Listen, first and foremost, thank you. I'm feeling good. I'm thankful to be here for another year and another day, and excited to be sitting in for Mr. Murphy for a little while.
All right. So we want to go ahead and kick today's show off, and we can kick off today's show with a
I know you were talking to me about healing, you know what I'm saying, in terms of like,
right.
You know, when we talk about the black community healing and what we need to do as a people, you know what I mean, you know, we have to be able to heal ourselves, you know what I'm saying, our healing will come from God and ourselves. We can't wait for outside forces to heal us, you know what I'm saying, I mean, you know, to turn our community around, to have a safe and decent and prosperous community, it's just things that we need to do that's internal to help us to get to where we need to get to. Like, you know, for instance, we need to spend our money with black businesses. I mean, the people that's in business, we need to make a conscious effort to make sure that we're giving black dollars to black businesses. You know, that's one way in terms of helping them to grow their business. In terms of growing their business, it means they can hire additional black people and putting people to work. You know, so I mean, it's just a lot of internal things that we need to do, man, to free ourselves and to help ourselves.
Yes, sir. And on that note, let's have a brief discussion here on the issues of crime.
Right.
Because that's something that, you know, that really is plaguing our community. And, you know, one of the things we need to do is get away from the negative stereotype of what's calling crime, like black-on-black crime. Crime is a social behavior. It's not a genetic one. It is thus
right.
American, not black. To call it black is to play into the hands of the racists who see blacks as inherently criminal. Crime is not termed white-on-white crime, such as like the Hillside Strangler or Italian community in terms of the mafia, or the Jewish community in terms of like the Son of Sam, where it's called black on black crime, it's expected to indict a race. Causes of American crime in the black community. The cultural values of American community. Vulgar materialism. Money is a measure of all things. Violence, method of problem solving, projection of the macho. Example of the colonizers of a country who stole and killed people. Alienation and anomaly, the lack of societal or moral guidance. Unequality distribution of social wealth. 2% of people control 80% of the wealth. Psychology of the oppressed. Hostility and violence turned inward. Self-hatred and misplaced aggression. Restrictive character of environmental tendencies to attack those closest to you. Criminal calculation, less risk to operate, commit crimes within the community than outside community. Less concern by the police, easier to escape. Lack of collective consciousness, not all black people, Americans. Alienated and not responsible. Criminals are not race conscious community builders. The lack of a collective community structure to prevent limit crime. Some basic solutions. Education, political education, defensive education, situational defense, martial arts, gun handling and gun training with arms, organization and action, community anti-crime committees, education and organization, community patrols, escort service for elders and women, youth structures, education, big brother, big sister programs, recreation programs, employment services, neighborhood watch and support programs, strengthening of the black family and support systems, religious, social, and political organizations, linkage between this struggle and others necessarily for social change, struggle to change society. Crime will not be totally eradicated until the conditions that cause crime are eradicated. And, you know, that's part of one of the things that we need to look at overall in terms of this whole approach to how we want to deal with crime.
Oh yeah. I mean, you know, basically you kind of put the summation to the entire thing. I mean, we had all them things in place, and like you say, you know, I mean, crime is basically, you know, I guess that you know, the whole terminology in terms of black on black crime was a very negative termination, just like nigger and some other things, you know. So I mean, you know, but like you say, crime is crime, you know. I mean, if you go to Chinatown, then you know the crime that's basically committed there is done by the people that live there, you know. So I mean, it's not no difference no matter where you go, you know. I think the biggest difference is that, you know, how do we turn around our situation when there's so many outside forces that influence the situation of our crime? I mean, you know, even when we talk about drugs, you know, and even though we may be a big participant in terms of selling drugs to one another, but do we really bring the drugs into the community? Absolutely not. Not on the larger levels, but, you know, very seldom do you hear about people with boatloads of drugs getting busted. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, there's a lot of things that happen to us that is directly from outside sources, but at the same time, we have to take the responsibility to turn around what we can turn around, because we already know that outside sources is trying to make sure that we don't turn around. You know, because, you know, one thing I always say is this here, brother, is that, you know, it's like living in poverty. You know what I mean? Poverty is bad for those that have to endure, but you have other people that's getting rich by other people living in poverty. And crime is the same way. You know what I mean? People is making money through other people going to jail.
Yes, that's so true. I remember one time I was having a discussion with Mayor Kurt Smoke, you know, and it was a discussion, you know, and I asked him, I said, Mayor, how does it feel being a former district attorney and knowing who's bringing the drugs into Baltimore, but you got to go through proper channels to bring charges against them, you know? And he looked at me and he just said, I don't want to talk about that. You know what I mean? And it's the thing is that people know these different families that be moving the drugs and stuff through our communities. But yet they, you know, they'll say their hands is tied in terms of going directly at the source or the root of the problem.
Uh-huh.
So, you know.
Well, you know, like you say, you know, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so, you know, we need a better system of law enforcement that can be able to help the politicians or the people in the positions to be able to bring charges against people to be able to go after those folks.
Yeah, well, you know, I guess, you know, that's like a two-part question. I mean, number one, you know, we have to have, you know, people that's really got the power and people that's in charge, they have to really have the will if they want to stop it. And I'm just saying, if so many people making money through the drug culture, then, you know, it's almost like before alcohol was legalized. And, you know, when you had the war during the prohibition period, when you had the war between the government and the mobsters, then basically it wasn't to rear alcohol, it was that, you know, the government was trying to figure out how could they get a cut of the alcohol business. So they decided that we create liquor stores, which means that they could tax the liquor stores, and now the government could get their cut. You know what I'm saying? We hadn't got to that point in terms of illegal drugs. Even though they're trying to move towards it with legalizing marijuana first, but they hadn't been able, you know, at this here point, then they hadn't got to the solution how they're going to deal with the other type of drugs.
Yeah, I saw the thing that came on the news about they wanted to have certain corners that would be where people...
Smoke-free, people
would openly
smoke.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, so, you know, that was interesting. And then also with Marilyn Mosley saying that, you know, she wasn't going to pursue prosecuting against people for
marijuana
distributions or marijuana uses. And,
right.
And it was interesting because the other day when I was out and about traveling, you know, that was part of the conversation some of the young people was having was that, you know, I was going down on Penn North, coming from there, going to everyone's place. And, you know, the young people was out and, you know, they was just openly selling their drugs, selling their marijuana, because they was just saying that, hey, you know, we ain't going to get arrested for it anyway. So, you know what I mean? I got asked about three times by different people that I want to, you know, partake in what they was offering.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you know, like I was telling a friend of mine earlier, was having a discussion, and you know, I mean, you know, it's like the legalization of casinos. You know, I mean, you start in one place, and once you start in one place, then it just snowballs. And that's the same thing with the marijuana industry right now. You know, I mean, you go to certain places like Denver and a few other places where you can openly smoke. Well, you know, once you start in one place, then, you know, it's going to move to other cities. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, Baltimore is moving that way here now.
Right. Okay, it looks like Mr. Murphy has joined us, so I'll bring him into the discussion.
Oh, okay.
Mr. Murphy, that's you on the line?
Yes, sir. How you doing?
Hey, what's up, Dave?
Hey, Mr. Bill Gooden. How you feeling, sir?
I'm good, man. Thank you. Yes, sir.
Yeah, we were just starting off the show tonight with a discussion around issue of crime in our community and, you know, problems and solutions. And, you know, did you have anything you wanted to discuss tonight?
Well, yeah, well, I can just go along with the flow. You know, I just chimed in about 5 minutes ago. I was listening to you brothers speaking about, you know, how legalization and capitalization and all that kind of fit together, especially with the government. And but the only problem is, you know, that I see on that subject, man, is that we get the raw deal from it all. You know, everybody else benefited financially. They prospered. We end up in jail. You know, and so, the, you know, the tale of the two cities, or even on the same subject matter, is that, you know, they bring it in. They can even, you know, they change the laws. They do this. But while all of this is taking place, we're the ones getting killed on the corners. We're the ones where if you got 10 or 15 young guys on the corner trying to sell the same product, running up to our cars and stuff because that's the only way they see or they feel as though that's the way they can make it. And then they the ones ended up in the penal institution, which is overflowing, and everybody else is prospering. And then they still prosper because then we had to go through the legal system. You know, they make money off us then, you know. So, you know, all, I don't care how it ends up, we get the brunt of it. And,
yeah.
And you know, so that, you know, so it's kind of, you know, that just truly bothers me, you know. And so, but, you know, there are some solutions, but there's quite a few solutions. But, you know, this has been so deeply entrenched. Like Brother Bill just mentioned, man, this is all the way back to Prohibition and stuff, man, you know. Even not only that, just like remember the number racket, the numbers game.
Absolutely.
You know, they come in there and they, you know, we made pretty good money. You know, the guys who was, you know, numbers runners or whatever would you want to call them back in the day. I mean, they did pretty good. And then the government come in and put all of them out of work, took the money right out of our community. And then they put out the lottery, you know, and then who benefits from the lottery? They do, not us. You know, so
right,
that's just
right.
My take on
yeah.
that.
Well, you're absolutely correct. You know, like you say, you know, look, you know, they always say, man, look, the people in charge kind of make the rules, and that's why, you know, we have to, you know, we somehow have to get in charge of the community that we claim is our community so that we can make the rules in the community that we claim to be ours. Because as long as other people is making the rules for you and they're the same people that have always oppressed you, then, you know, you really can't look forward to them to free you from the oppression that they have on you, because once they free you, then who else they're gonna oppress? They have to have another group of people they're gonna oppress, and who's the favorite group of people to oppress? Black people, the ones that have always been oppressed the most.
Yep, and if we don't, like I said, we don't make changes. We, not them, because they ain't gonna make no. Like I said, why would they do that? It don't benefit them. You know, so like I said, it's up to us to free us. It's up to us to, you know, provide solutions. And there's a few solutions I can think of right off the top of my head. That, for first and foremost, so like I say, I say this and I'm going to continue to say it. You know, God bless us with every, I'm talking about black people, indigenous people, African Americans, whatever you want to call yourself. And bless us with everything we need. And Brother Bill and I, you know, and Brother Ty, you know this, we host this monthly meeting called Black Men Unifying Black Men. And we bring brothers together, all walks of life, from 2 years old all the way up to 90, 100 sometimes. You know, we have brothers in there almost 80-something, you know, come to the beach, just sit down and break bread together, get to know one another. You know, just share information with one another. And a lot of things that happen, we've been doing this for over 4 years. Now, we don't have what you call some type of agenda like most organizations do, you know, but this is our agenda. Our agenda is just straight up is this. We want you to get to know one another, first and foremost. Because when you get to know a brother, then you can sit down and break bread together, then you can also do business together, you can also share information with one another, resources with one another. you can help each other out with one another. A lot of great things have came out of that meeting. And see, that's one of the solutions where black men can come together and reason together and, you know, be better men. And, you know, and like I said, then we can take information like that back to our communities and to our businesses and services and try to uplift our people. But there's quite a few solutions, but the key thing is unifying each other, you know, because like I said, there's a host of people out there, a host of them out there doing wonderful works, but we scattered all over the place and we don't kind of connect the dots, so to speak. And it's not always on our part either. It's not always our fault because there is a concerted effort to keep us apart and to pit us against each other. And people don't realize this, you know. I talk about propaganda, you know, rumors. You know, that's what propaganda is—just rumors. You know, stories being told. You could tell this brother one thing, you tell a brother another thing, and then next thing, you know, brother, I heard somebody told me this, and then brothers kill each other over that kind of stuff. Cause I heard somebody said, right. Oh, you think this? Oh, I heard about that, and they end up killing. I mean, really killing each other. Can you imagine? That, you know, they have done such a good job on us, so deeply entrenched in our being right now, that black people really don't like black people. We got people bleaching their skins. We got people thinking they're ugly because the model they set up is white, blonde-haired women. We got all kinds of propaganda being perpetrated through us now. Even the media right now, which I'm a part of, they even got these things coming on, these documentaries coming on television and stuff now about what they got called R. Kelly. I'm not endorsing him. I'm not saying he's right or I'm not saying he's wrong. But I do know what they're doing, though. They sending out messages that black men ain't no good. Now they coming out with the Michael Jackson thing. And these saying that, and they prophesizing off of it. But at the same time, they're killing two birds with one stone. They're still saying black men ain't no good. Here we got Bill Cosby sitting in a jail cell. All them other guys who've been accused of some of them same things, they ain't even been to court yet. He ain't been to court twice. You know, all kinds of stuff. You know, right. I mean, man, I get pissed by just thinking about it. But then it gets back to your home, man.
Well, you know, go ahead.
You go ahead, Bill.
No, I'm saying, you know, what you're saying, Dave, is right. I like I said, I guess it's just so many ways that they come after us, man. You know, it's like, even when you're talking about the media, you know, and I know everybody may not look at things the same way, but it's like, you know, when us three was growing up and you had three or four channels on television, then it was regulated that you had pretty much family-type stories. You know, you had Leave It to Beaver and stuff like that. You know, today they put 1,000 channels on your TV, you know, so people can look at everything because they're programming you and they kind of dictating the behavior that you're going to have. You know, and you know, let me just say this, man, because I know this is kind of hard to talk about to an extent, but even in terms of, you know, when you're talking about power and stuff, you know, when you look at the gay movement, you know what I mean? They were so organized, and they had people that had money and people in the proper places that once, you know, they was able to force Obama to put into effect that it's okay, you know, for a man to marry a man and a woman to marry a woman. And, you know, you had churches even brought into that. Now, you know, when you think about it, how can a church buy into something like that, man? you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
I mean, you know
exactly.
What I'm saying? Look, people is people, but I'm just saying, you know what I mean? If you're going to talk about God, you know what I'm saying? I mean, you're just changing, you know what I mean? God created man and woman for one another. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, mm-hmm. So, I mean, anytime that we take the power from God and just kind of institute laws that's totally against God, what does that say, man?
Well, like I always say, you know, there's three sets of laws. There's God's laws, there's natural laws, and there are man's laws. But man laws are what we call rules. And man set his own rules to fit his own purposes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why, you know, things are so haywire right now. You know, people don't know who they are, what they are these days. Men don't even know if they men or not. You know, women don't know if they women or not. I mean, everything's so confused, and that's what propaganda does. It's caused confusion.
Right.
Children right now, they don't even know, you know, what you know what to do. But, you know, back in the day, like Bill said, you know, back in the day, we had a certain set of rules. You know, we had a certain set of channels. You know, it was back in the day, we had, well, most men went to work, most women took care of the families. So everybody could define their roles. You know, it was almost cut and dry back then. But now, because all these new rules have come taking place, and I'm not saying women should be in the kitchen and men should be working and nothing like that, but I'm saying that's the way it was back then.
Right.
But, you know, but now, you know, a woman make more money than the man do. And she said, and half the time, she said, I don't need no man. I don't need you. I can do by myself. I go get me another woman and be happy. You know, and so, you know, we got all kinds of stuff. I only need you to make a baby no more. I can go to a sperm bank. I can go to something else and do all these different things. So, you know, man laws have changed the game. And they change according to the purpose, and the reason why they change the game, because power only concedes to power. Like you say, the gay rights movement, they had power. They had connections in every area. And they pull their resources, they march together, and they would pull it. And now you see what they have. Now they got, they get benefits. They get just as much. Matter of fact, they got more benefits than we do.
Yes, they do. Yeah, so when you look at the world, man, like I said, I'm not a big Bible reader, but, you know, when you look at the whole story of Sodom and Gomorrah, man, you know, you look at the conditions of the world, and, I mean, it's like, you know, we damn near headed in that direction, you know what I'm saying? So, you know what I mean, it's just things that we have to try to do to turn this thing around, man, you know what I mean? I believe in a creator, and, I mean, I don't think that, you know, the world could constantly continue to get bad and continue to go this here way without nothing happening. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, the only people that could turn around what you call your community is the people that live within the community. It's not people from the outside that's going to turn your community around unless they plan to take your community from you.
And you're so right about that. You know, see, that's part of the solution. And when we can come together, reason together. And, you know, Bill, you know, you and I have a lot of conversations. So do you and I, Brother Satai. We have a lot of conversations just about us as a people. And we know from the outside sources, you know, they ain't going to never let you go. Why are you going to hip a lame to the game? I mean, seriously, you know, we from the hood. You know, why would you hip somebody that can come back and do something to you?
Right.
And so, you know, they're going to keep you dumbfounded. They're going to keep you in bondage. They're going to keep you spending their money on them. And that they ain't spending money on us, and that's the way the game is played. The only way the game gonna be changed unless we change the game, and the only way we can change the game is that we gonna have to sit down and start reasoning with one another. You know, we got to say that just like the Jews, and you know, I tell people that I was just talking about this the other night. You know, when I was about 14 years old, I used to have a job. I quit school and went to work because I like money. You know, I like to keep things nice and stuff. So I always kept a job back then. But I was a dishwasher at the time, working for this Jewish company. And it was a Jewish catering service. And the owner of that place, you know, he hired black people. You know, that's all. He wasn't hard no way. He just hard black people, and but he was kind of what I call down to earth, so to speak. He was just straight up the way he talked to people. You know, straight up. He ain't pulled back no punches. And he was saying, and he told me, he said, you know what? He said, I don't understand your people. He said, if y'all just pull y'all resources together, you know, say our people, man, we will suffer greatly. If y'all just stop doing this and stuff, but he said. Another thing, say what we do. He said, "Y'all need to learn." They said, "What we do." He said, "Now most of the people that I associate in the synagogue that I go to, he said, I can't stand. Excuse my speech. I can't stand their damn guts. Can't stand them. Get on his last nerve." He said. But he said, when it comes down to doing business with one another, they said that they put all that on the side because they know for the greater good of their people. And their children and their children's children, that it's going to benefit them. And so they put all that personal feelings on the side. And they do business. They reason with one another. They do business with each other. Now, in our community, we have been taught You burn me one time, you ain't gonna burn me no more. One, you get burned by one black man. Some people hold that against the whole race forever. But yet the other, our other community burns us every day, every day, and we don't say open our mouth.
That's true, we got
some mind changes, some mindsets to change. I'm serious, you know.
No, that's true, you know, because I mean you know because you hear black people, they if you're in business. And they come, somebody come to you, and they feel they got a bad thing, a bad shape from you. First thing they say, man, I ain't never going to black people no more. You know what I'm saying? Well, hell, you know, you go to white businesses every day, and when you get a bad deal, you may not go to that particular store, but you go to another store that belongs to a white person.
That's right, and don't say a word. Don't open your mouth, you know. You'd be happy to give them back. You're happy to give them your dollars. But
in
any case, you know, but like I say, that's just, go ahead, Brother Satari, I hear you.
I said, dollar stays in our community 6 hours, where it transfers hands on the white community at least 10 times before it leaves, in the Jewish community 12 to 13 times. So, you know, we see 6 hours worth of time of money moving through our community, where if it was to transfer hands 10 times, that means that $1 would have the power of $10.
Right.
So with dollar multiplying effect, you know, the thing is, and I ask people this all the time, how many different black people do you do business with? Are you spending at least 25% of your income with other blacks? You know, and if people was to go down the list, and you know, it'd be hard, to be able to come up with, as the rapper Killer Mike tried to do for 36 hours, he had a concert coming up where he had to perform in Macon, Georgia. He was in Atlanta, and he was trying to live all black for 36 hours. So he ended up sleeping on a park bench because he couldn't find a hotel that was black owned. Then when he found a restaurant that was black owned, couldn't eat the food in there because none of it came from black farmers. So, you know, he was just talking about how back in the days of quote unquote segregation, you know, we were better off because we had institutions in our community that we could spend our money with, and we was able to benefit and prosper from at exchange. And, you know, he said, but with the coming of integration, we lost that power.
And that just go proves the point, how they can change the law, integration, and choke our community right out. They used to do it the other way, you know, like the Rosewood. They bomb us and burn us out and everything like that. But, you know, but then they say, well, you know, dude, there's a greater good than just integrate. We can take their money here, come and spend the money on us now. But, you know, it's a lot of things that, you know, society, you know, and societies. Let me say this. Now, I'm just going to take, you know, this Black History Month, and, you know, I'm going to just take a lesson from history. And I heard what Bill was saying, you know, about, you know, back in the biblical days, just Sodom and Gomorrah and everything, all the signs are showing right now today, even from the present, like one of the most crazy kings back then. You know, but everything, all the signs are there. But they had great empires back in the day, like the Roman Empire. They had the Syrian Empire. They had so many great dynasties that conquered everything. I mean, they went out and whipped every country around them, and nothing could withstand them. But all of these dynasties fell. The only reason why they fell because they had an uprising. That's the only thing that brought these dynasties down to its knees, was an uprising. And the United States and other major countries around it knows this. That's why they do so much to suppress us, because if we ever got our act together, and we don't have to uprise, we don't have to try to pillage against, you know, burn stuff down and all this kind of thing. All we have to do is stop spending. Start spending with our own. They say we spend $1.2 trillion annually. I say this again. I think we spend three or four times as much. I think we have that much. And they say that equates to the ninth largest country in the world. And so, but you know, people all over the world knows our power. They know it. They know that we are the greatest consumers in the world. We feed, we support the whole world system, our black people. But if we reversed it, like you say, Brother Satari, we took that money and then, you know, multiplied by 10 by going to 10 black businesses and multiply that a little bit more, and then you will see the dynasty start falling. You're going to see major corporations, major banks, they're going to fall to their knees. Because small percentages makes the difference. And but in any case, you know, I'm just saying this to say that, but, you know, there's a lot of facts out there, and there's a lot of suppression that's going to continue to happen. But like I say, power only concedes the power until we recognize our own power and make a concerted effort to support one another, to bring back resources to our own communities and stop running to other people's communities and come back to the hood again. Build up shops, because like I say, everybody come from all over the world and set up shops in our hood and make a fortune. So it's got to be some money there.
But yeah, you know, it's just like when...
Go ahead, bro.
It's just like when they had the Montgomery bus boycott, and they got towards the end of the boycott. The reason that part of the reason the law was changed was because the people was in position, even though they didn't take and seize the opportunity, they was in position because they had an opportunity. When A.J. Gaskins came to one of the meetings, he told Dr. King, he said, "Dr. King, we got them right where we want them." Dr. King's response was, "Where's that, A.J.?" A.J. Gaskins, who was a black businessman, said, "We can buy the bus company."
Yes, sir.
And but the civil rights movement wasn't ready for black empowerment during that time, so the bus company didn't get bought. But the opportunity was there. The opportunity was there. And just think if they had went on and bought the bus company, then, you know, that would have set a tremendous precedent in our community and also in terms of the history of our struggle in this country. But then people would have saw the power.
You know, Brother, to
purchase things. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, you know, Brother Bill.
Yeah.
You know, I know, you know, back in the day, they used to be on the front lines, you know, in our community. You know, you used to be out there protesting and stuff. You know, you had closed down stores and stuff. You know, you stood up for injustices back in the day. And let me ask you a question. You know, because, you know, I'm going to tell you why, after you answer the question, I'm going to tell you why I asked it. But why did you do those type of things?
Well, you know, because, so, you know, you kind of grow and you feel what's right and what's wrong. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, I mean, I guess that I feel that I have an obligation to, you know, once you know that you have a people that's committing crimes against you, you know, then you have an obligation to fight back. It's almost like somebody breaking your house. You know what I'm saying? Well, you can let them break in your house and stand out of the way. As they're breaking in, you can take some action to stop them from coming in. So, you know, that I guess that's the answer to your question, man, is that, you know, it was a need to recognize that people were selling us bad food and somebody had to stand up. And I always say this here, Dave, you know, I never take credit for what happened because I always take credit that God put it up on my heart, and it became my mission that particular time to take the action that you take.
And you know, and so, you know, and you and I and Brother Satan, we all right, all of us, if you put us together, we all are a year apart. You know, so we come up in the same time frame. And Brother Satawi was out there as well on the front lines back in the day, you know, in the civil rights movements and stuff like that. Why did you do the thing that you do, Brother Satawi?
Well, it all started, I guess, to say, when I went to Vietnam, and the person asked me, said, why are you over here fighting for your country, yet back home you get treated like a second-class citizen, or, you know, they use the word, you get treated like a quote-unquote an N. And so, you know, that began at age of 18, began to trigger some thoughts in my mind. And when it began to trigger some thoughts in my mind, I looked at the conditions of our people. It just was like, And being stationed on the West Coast, where the Black Panther Party was, began to radicalize me, and then also reading the autobiography of Malcolm X while sitting in a military jail cell, began to have an impact and influence on me. And so I began to seek out information and institutions that was engaged in our struggle for freedom, justice, and equality. And so, you know, like I said, at a young tender age of 18 years old is when I began to actually get involved in the Black Liberation Movement and been a soldier for justice ever since.
Wow. And so the reason why I ask y'all these questions is this. You know, y'all individuals, but yet you saw injustice. And so, you know, you didn't just sit back. You didn't just sit back and say, well, you know, it's a darn shame, man. You know, they doing this to us and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, in that passive kind of attitude, because a lot of passivity is going on today. Everybody's waiting for somebody else to do something. But see, what you brothers did back in the day, you stood up. You took a stand. You stood in the gap. You stood tall. You stood firm to fight against injustices. And you took your own time, your own energy, and put it on the front lines. And see, ladies and gentlemen, what I'm trying to say is that's what it's going to take for all of us. You know, we got to bring that passion, because you're not just taking a stand against injustice. You're taking a stand for your children and your children's children. And we all of us, see, when all of us take a stand, I don't care if it's in your office, in your community, on a football field, or in the corporate offices somewhere, we have to start taking a stand. See, when we stand up, you know, when we continue to take a stand, you know, you will never stand alone, because there will always be another brother to stand with you. If another person see you stand up, you know, it's a snowball effect. Then other people will take a stand. But you, like to say, Brother Satow would say, the man in the mirror, you got to face the facts. You know, you see a problem in the community, you got to stand up to it. You can't wait for nobody else to do what we can do for ourselves. And so, I'm just saying this. Well, I like to give people flowers when it's just due, because people, I don't know who's on this airways right now, but you got two brothers on here, Brother Bill Gooden and Brother Satawi Jahi. And I've known both of these brothers over 20-something years, and both of these brothers got strong track records of being out there on the front lines, and they what I call true soldiers. And they still fighting until this day. And so, ladies, just no excuse, no matter what situation. And these brothers have paid, excuse my expression, they paid a hell of a price for your sake, not just for themselves, but for you as well. And how dare you sit down, hear this Black History Month, and you hearing the stories of the sacrifices our ancestors made for us to even have these advantages that we have today. But you also see that a lot of things that we had thought we had overcame are still relevant and still here today. You see racism now. You see it all in our elementary schools now. I live in Baltimore City. On the news, almost every day, you see a high school, an elementary school, nooses of this, some kind of racism taking place. And it's from the children to the boardroom now, government, all the way up to our president of the United States, letting you know that you're a second-class citizen. That's what they think. But we are the original people. And everything begins with us, and everything going to end with us. But, you know, until we take a stand, nothing's going to happen, because ain't nobody going to do for us what we can do for ourselves. So, ladies and gentlemen, you know, I appreciate these two brothers holding down the fort, you know, because I was on a conference call earlier. I appreciate you, Brother Bill, for taking time out, man, for stepping in, because you always stood up and stepped up. And Brother Satari, as always, man, I appreciate you, sir, because, like I say, you're a true soldier. You've always been on the front lines, but I want to share something with you. But I got these few, we only got about 10, 15 minutes left, but I want to share something with you. You know, both of these brothers are part of the National Black Unity News, and I am pleased and I am proud to have my brother Bill Gooden on the line because he and I collaborated this publication together. You know, and we just sit down and thought, you know, a wonderful thing happened when this, you know, because I gave up on newspapers. I was doing everything online, and Bill just kept on persisting. Man, you know, you need to start another newspaper. And then we came up with the idea of the National Black Unity News. And I'm pleased to say right now, today, and it's on about a year and a half ago, maybe a little longer, but I'm pleased to say that we are the number one black newspaper in the country right now, in the entire United States. We are more staffed than any black newspaper in the country, and we are circulated throughout the entire United States. We are circulated in any other newspaper as well. And so, and the National Black Unity News is for us and it's by us. And not only that, ladies and gentlemen, we own less than 1% of the media, less than 1%. So the information that you're receiving right now is coming from outside resources. You need to get it from us. And what makes the National Black Unity News so unique is that we don't offer, there's over 200 black newspapers in this country. But we're the only one to have a unique format the way we do. Most of the other publications, I'm not putting them down. They're reporting what's going on in their individual communities. They reported on what's happening today. But unfortunately, the time has moved so swiftly. Technology has moved so swiftly. You see, the time they put stuff in their publications, it's already old news through the Internet. But you know, but one thing about the National Black Unity News is this: it's solution oriented. We have individuals in every profession. We try to bring as many people in there as we possibly can: real estate brokers, financial services, health and wellness, all types of information that will increase your quality of life. And this is by individuals that generally care about you. They share tidbits about how they can enhance your life. And so, you know, you need to get this publication. You can get it online. You can read it for free online. Or you can get a subscription right from to your home or your office or any place else in the United States and beyond. But so all you got to do is give us a call at 443-455-2373. Or you can go to www.thenationalblackunitynews.com. And while we have you on this airways, I want to make some announcements. We will continue to have these airways on this particular show that will come on Mondays at 7:30. We will continue with that. But in the very, very near future, we would have another publication. This would be what you call, I don't know if they call it podcast. You know, everybody got different names in the media for different things. Simulcast. But Brother Bill Gooden, that's on the line with us today, will be hosting the show for the National Black Unity News as well. You see, and the reason why we are doing this is this, just straight up. Like I said before, we own less than 1% of the media. So we really don't have a voice. We need to shout it out as many our voices as we possibly can to get information to you. We encourage all the editors in the publication to have their own broadcast so that we can hit you. If we can't hit you through our other media, they can hit you from other areas because this is some serious times, ladies and gentlemen. And we got to bring out all of our resources. And if you want to be a part of this great movement, this great evolution, I call it, evolution of information, evolution of economic empowerment, evolution of assimilating information that's, like I said, that's going to increase your quality of life, then you need to join the National Black Unity News. You need to get with us, and you need to get with Brother Bill when he brings the show out. You need to continue with this show because this show is a powerful, powerful show. You know, we brought on quite a few guests, you know, and recently, but it's going to increase. And we are escalating. We are growing. And Brother Satari, I appreciate you, sir, man, because, like I said, you stood in the gap. Brother Bill, I appreciate you because, you know, iron sharpens iron. Man, you took me to another level. And we're going to continue to, climb the stairs of success because it's not about, you know, us being glorified. It's about us, we, me and you, we the people, because we all in this together. And we need each other. You know, I am you and you are me. And so, brothers, I appreciate you. And, Brother Satari, I know we got about 5 or 10 minutes left. I'm going to go back to you, sir.
All right. Yeah, Bill, he's no longer on the line. I just texted him to find out if he meant to get off or did he want to come back on.
Okay.
You said a lot. And, you know, and I know we kicked around some different topics today here on the day's show. And one of the things is that we always want to do is to keep constantly moving forward. There's some great things happening in our community. And one of the things that my wife shares with me a lot because she's a substitute school teacher in Baltimore County. And she's just talking about, you know, how the young people have changed because she has young people now that will stand up to her in the kindergarten, you know.
Yeah.
And, mm-hmm. you know, they cover it with stuff like, Miss Jahi, you don't know what kind of day I've been having. And she said, well, whatever kind of day you've been having, you know, it can't be that bad that, you know, you to the point that you just feel as though you don't need to share anything with anybody. She says, you know, she's got situations where the children, they're supposed to be doing art, and the child doesn't want to share the box of crayons. Or, you know, just, I mean, it's just so interesting that the things that she comes home and tells me about, you know, in terms of her experience substitute school teaching in Baltimore County schools, because she was just saying that how it just, you know, it's just like something she's never seen, you know. And the thing is that, you know, my wife has worked with children all of her life. And so, you know, it's very interesting that this is an observation that she has in terms of what she sees and how she sees what she sees. I think Brother Bill has joined us back on the program. Well, let me see.
Yeah, I'm back. I'm sorry, man. That's me, man. My battery went out on my house phone, so I'm on my cell phone now.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, I heard the beep, and that's why I was wondering where that noise kept coming from.
Yeah. I was hoping it would hold up
long. Yeah, but go ahead, Satav. You know, like I said, man, you know what? Now, your wife should know. Because, you know, because y'all raised children up, I mean, ever since I met y'all, but their movement's unlimited. And she can tell what happens, you know, from back then to now, to see the difference, you know, in the evolution of how the children are acting and thinking today. And, you know, I can't think of nobody that I know that would know firsthand how the changes has now taken place in the attitudes of our young people. Back to you, sir.
Yes, sir. I mean, because, you know, just to give you an example, the other day, you know, we had a post that went out on Facebook, and we had, you know, some of our former students who are in their 30s now who responded to that post. Well, I'll read you the post. It says, Cynthia Jahi and Satawi Baba Jahi operated a neighborhood recreation center adjourned to the Rydell Heights Elementary Middle School, which hosted camps. The Culture Center became a hoard as a safe haven for love and self-identifying education, where children learn modern dance and receive youth counseling. The Jahis may be best known for teaching the principles of Kwanzaa as a week-long celebration
of year-round principles. This is a black, Baltimore Black History salute. It has our picture on there. But anyway, one of the students says that, yes, you guys were the greatest thing. This generation will never have what you and Mrs. Jahi provided for us. And, you know, and that's just interesting, you know, in terms of the thousands of young people who we impacted and their, you know, and their love, admiration, and respect for what we shared and what we did, you know, with them. And, you know, and the list goes on and on and on. I mean, because it just, you know, hey, it's just a thing about doing good works. And when you do good works, you know, you throw, there's a saying in the Hoosier, so you throw a rock into the river and it comes back to you based on the works that you do. And if you've done good by your people, you know, you always have friends everywhere. So, you know, just
well, like I said, you know, I just happened, okay, you know, I just happened to see that post too, you know. And you know, and like I said, it is a job well done, because like I said, I seen firsthand knowledge of the work that y'all, you know, that y'all put out there. And you know, like I said, we can already shut this thing down. We only got several minutes left. And so you know, that young man, whoever put that post out there, salute to him as well, because at least he recognized.
That was Gerald McIntosh.
Yeah, and he identified, you know, people that had made changes in his life. So, you know, kudos to him, and especially kudos to you as well. And Brother Bill, you know, I know you had got cut off, but, you know, I was telling him about, you know, some of the things that you have done as well and over the years. And like I say, man, you know, you and I, man, you know, we you know, we gonna fight this battle. You know, we hooked up in the National Black Unity News as well as Black Men Unifying Black Men, and both of these entities are geared toward providing unity. And I appreciate you for that, sir. You know, any closing remarks, sir?
Well, no, Dave. Only time I say this, you know, what I mean, you called my name is Brother Tyrese several times, but. You know, even though people know who you are, you know, but I mean, it's hard to call our names and not recognize you, man, because, I mean, we've been out there just as long as us. And, you know, that's what I always say. God give everybody a different type of assignment. We all don't do the same thing, but if we come together and use what God has given us, then we'll fit, then we'll complete the puzzle.
That's what it's all about, you know. Like you say, we connect the dots, we complete the puzzles, man, and like I say, we come together in unity. We have, God has blessed us with everything we need to do for ourselves. We can't expect nobody from outside to do for us what we can do for ourselves. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you're listening to this broadcast today or in the archives, you know, support the National Black Unity News. Support Black Men Unifying Black Men. Support Movements Unlimited and the Vortex, our travel agent, Mr. and Mrs. Jahi, because all of these entities are here to support you. And we thank you, and I appreciate you, and look forward, because we're coming out stronger, better, powerful, and it's all about us helping us. When we do that, you know, we help each other. So back to you, Brothers of Tyree. I know we about at that time, so thank you, sir. Back to you, sir.
All right. Thank you, David. Thank you, Bill. And this show is brought to you by The Vortex. You say, what is The Vortex? The Vortex is where you can go and create your own free online wholesale travel booking engine. You go to vortex365.com/MUGROUP, and you create a free account. And every time you use this account, you will save, you will beat the online prices 85% of the time. It means, yes, you'll beat Expedia, Priceline, Trivago, cheap hotels. 85 to 90% of the time, our prices are cheaper than the price that they have in terms of going online to find an online cheap price. So when you're searching the internet, remember to use the Vortex. We have a patent-driven algorithm. All that is just saying that we have a way that we're able to search the internet and look for prices, and then we're able to come up 85 to 90% of the time with the cheapest online price. So remember, go to www.myvortex365.com/NUGROUP and create your free Vortex account and start enjoying your travel savings. All right. And with that said, what we're going to do is close out with our theme song called It's My Time. And we want to make sure that everybody understands that we need to be making sure that things that we do, that it is our time. Our time to find our destiny.
Yes, sir.
Oh, there's a feeling inside of me telling me that I can be more and more of who I am. It's the power to stand in. Open up. That's calling me to wake up to what.
Okay, good night, everybody.
Okay, good night. All right, Dave. All right, y'all.